Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett and today we are talking part two of the trade week that seems to have gone on forever. And if it's going to be anything like next year, it will go on forever with the talk of trading picks, live picks and players during right up until the draft. But as always, we've got Stevie Fizz. How you doing, pal?
Well, speaking of something that goes forever, I'm pretty pumped because the World Series is about to start today, the Major League Baseball season, that 162 games of absolute extreme pain is about to be over. The Dodgers marching towards the World Series. Kershaw's on the hill today. I'm very excited, Jono.
Sounds good. And what do they play? Every 2 or 3 days, is it? The NBA?
They play back-to-back, then have a rest day, then it's all over the shop. They go 2-3-2, so home or away, home.
Okay, so by next week, we could be without Steve Fizz if the Dodgers win the World Series.
I'll be dead.
Go longer.
I'll be dead.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. And Statesman will take over. And he will be a very bit quiet tonight. He's a bit under the weather, so welcome to you, Statesman. How are you feeling, mate?
I'm okay, gentlemen, to be fair. I'm okay. I have been going through some changes this week. I've got a true belief that there's only three types of people that give you a good reference. Your family and friends, because they sort of feel obligated and they're invested in you. Your mentors, because they're the ones trying to get you to strive to be your best. And those that want to get rid of you. In other words, promote you to move you on. It's fair to say in my professional life, there's a few challenges heading my way. So I'm trying to work out. They're not my friends and family. They're not my mentors. So what does that leave me?
The truth.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Which is an interesting thought I should share.
Huh. No, but it seems as if the sunny weather and the cold weather have affected you there, Statesman, and that's what happens when the sun shines in Tassie, because isn't there a bit of snow in Mount Wellington at the moment?
No, there's not. It's been quite balmy weather, but to be fair, I did go interstate and experience different weather types and humidity. God knows how you people live with that. But come back to the beautiful, dry, crisp air of Tasmania, and I seem to be struggling a tad.
doesn't it get like over like 20 degrees and old people are just dropping dead in the streets of Hobart, isn't it?
It's pretty much, and you think this is bad. I'm in my sixth day of this, and right at the height of it, I did an interview on Grandstand, and it's fair to say I took every drug possible to sound like someone that was slightly a human being.
As long as you didn't drop the C-bomb, it was all fine.
No, I avoided that on the ABC. I know my place.
Oh, geez, they would have castrated you if you dropped it on there. No, there hasn't been much news out of the AFL this week as they're sort of in hibernation, letting the other sports have a bit of a go, and like the Dodgers and the Socceroos and whatnot. But as I said at the top of the show, you got the live picks being able to be traded this year in the draft, which would make for interesting watching, because I think they do televise it on Foxtel. So it'd be good to watch to see how they do it. And if it's anything like that movie Draft Day with Kevin Costner, you can just trade rape someone right to hell right at the end there and walk away with about 5 first round picks, which would be quite amazing.
And Jennifer Garner.
Was she in that movie?
Jesus Christ. Did you watch it?
I watched it a long time ago. Yeah.
Can I say the trade period brought out a term that's probably used in the other sports that you guys follow? Salary dump.
Mm. Yeah. It's like we saw with Essendon today.
It's hit the news, and it also came out during the week that a certain Collingwood player who got picked up in free agency was almost salary dumped back to Fremantle. That's quite interesting, gentlemen.
Now there's no Matt Lobey.
Ah,
no,
Carlton. That's why, not Collingwood.
No, Collingwood and Fremantle were in discussions to trade back their lovely little forward that Collingwood picked up from free agency and played a magnificent two games. So there was talk that there was a salary dump on him, but the AFL wouldn't approve it. So that's quite interesting that's starting to come into our game, something that's a bit better known in the American model.
Yeah, it is.
Salary dump everywhere all over North Melbourne because they've got money to burn, so they'd have to spend it. But if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors or at Statesman33. We've got the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, and we are on Instagram. Search The Draft Doctors there. And the Facebook page as well, search The Draft Doctors. But we are talking week two of the trade week and just what the implications it has of the delistings, which players move to which club. And kicking us off this week is Statesman. Who have you got there first up?
Well, I'm going to talk about, we're talking about Fremantle Dockers. We'll talk about Wilson. And we're not talking the ball with the face painted on. We're talking about Nathan Wilson, the defender. So what he will do is actually directly replace the Lockie, because if your name's Lockie and you play for Fremantle, you're a good player. Weller's role. Can't see him having any major changes in Wilson's scoring, to be honest. Averages around the 70, just above 70 for a halfback flanker. I think the real winner out of this trade will actually be Zach Williams, who will get a position shorn up in that defensive role for GWS. So it'll force him to stay on the half-back flank, because I'm sure owners of Zach Williams, i.e. Steve, who saw him go up the forward line and pump out a few nice 30s and 40s throughout the year, which dropped his average to mid-80s, will be quite relieved that he's actually going to get that loose running and link-up role through the half-back line. It may also give Perryman, and also one to watch out for, Isaac Cumming, some opportunities to actually play for GWS. And as they keep losing some of these quality players, you're going to see these young guns have been slowly developing in the NEAFL get their opportunity. And Isaac Cumming is an absolute ripper gentleman. So he's certainly one you should be interested in picking up late in the draft, because he'll be a bit of a roughie that'll score quite well.
Yeah, no, all about Nathan Wilson next year, especially for Supercoach purposes, because I was just having a look. He was the number 1 metres gain player this year. So that's what Fremantle need, is something when he can kick it out of that back line and get into those ball users of your Harley Bunnells, your Connor Blakeleys, if he's up in the midfield, pushing forward to, Cam McCarthy? Shane Kirsten?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see who they go for at pick number two, because there are some more mature tools actually in the draft. So I was actually interested in your thoughts of whether losing Lockie Weller, bringing in Wilson, and obviously getting Matera, of where you actually see Fremantle in the trade period. For standard players, I think they're a break even, but obviously getting pick number two for Lockie Weller is quite incredible. But we all know that probably the top five picks are actually going to come from Victoria. So does that set them up for a problem down the track as well? Might have been better with a few Jets coming from WA the following year to actually try and get a number two pick for the following season. But everyone's hyped at the moment for what 2018 is going to produce at the draft. I always get a little bit sus when people talk about super drafts 12 months, 18 months out before it actually happens.
Well, as we put it out there on the Twitter, every player is going to win a Brownlow medal and be a 300-game player. Who have you got there, Steve? Just throwing you under the bus there.
Yeah, just wait till I take
He's really interested today.
Wait till I take a swig of my cup of tea. Matt, I've got Matt Kennedy, and he's moved to Carlton in the trade period, gentlemen. And how do you spell Carlton? O-P-P-O. That's a long word. Opportunity. That's how you spell Carlton. But he's...
I thought it was GWS, but oh well.
Well, the thing with for Matt Kennedy is he's trying to play a midfield role, but they're already stacked to the brim with midfielders, so he's been pushed to the outside. Played the 19 games, averaged the 68 Dream Team, 64 Supercoach, but his game time, gentlemen, is exceptionally low at only 70%. So when players are down like that, I tend to look at the points per minute. We know Statesman's a big fan of points per minute. not eye-popping at 0.78 Dream Team points per minute, but playing that outside-ish role, you've got to think that if all the opportunity in the world is going to be there for him to move inside at Carlton. So this is where, and going into his third season, that not only with the 10% increase in game time, there should be just natural development, I would have thought. So going into his third year, he's a first-round pick straight out of the academy. Obviously, more time in the middle. Carlton have targeted him. They know they're going for the full rebuild. Apparently, my daughter's going. Crackers in the other room. I don't know if you can hear that.
Oh, no. We can hear it.
Oh, there you go. Oh, okay. Well, she's all aboard the Matt Kennedy train. But it's going to be really interesting to me because I don't think he keeps forward status. I think that was a lot of his appeal this year is he kept forward, is he had forward status, and I really don't see him having that. So in a redraft, I'm really wary. You might grab him late in a sort of 10-team, 22-player thing. But in a keeper, I think he's a great stash. I think I would wait for him to, if you don't have him already, I think there's going to be some hype around him moving to Carlton because people know he's going to get that. But I think if he doesn't come out and start producing 100-plus scores straight away, which I personally don't think he will, he'll probably be in the 90s, then you might be able to buy low. But if he's in the pool or in your draft, I'd certainly be snapping him up for my keeper picks.
I can just see him actually being still maintaining a low time on ground, so talking the 70 to 75%, but actually having a scorer friendlier role. So I think you'll find him actually closer to the 85 to 90, which means he's very much an M6 and M7 next year. I think you're right, he won't keep his forward status. But in keeper, that's looking pretty sexy because he's a longer-term hold for that. So you can pick up an M7 that's going to turn an M3 the following year. Great rewards.
Yeah, I think that's the play, is not to expect him to be a real startable, bankable piece this year unless you've got injuries or what have you. And the other guy who's gone to Carlton in the trade period who's sort of got the midfield time allure is Darcy Lang from Geelong. And I kind of don't mind this pickup. Wins a lot of uncontested ball. That's his strength. It's finding space. But he's actually a pretty handy tackler as well. Carlton need to get better at tackling, and they certainly need to get players who are able to actually find space and win some uncontested ball. Had a funny old year, broke his leg, came back for the finals, and I think he benefited, like his fantasy scores are actually okay in the finals. I think he benefited from Geelong playing that chip style of game where he managed to take a lot of marks, scored a nice ton. Averaged the 66 Dream Team, 70 Super Coach. He's going to retain forward status,
yes,
but which is more important, I guess, for your redraft leagues. The thing is, I kind of have shades of Nathan Hrovat with Darcy Lang. Now, whether you think he's better than that, but we also, if we rewind to February this year, we all sort of thought, oh, moving to a crummier team, you'll get the midfield time. But just time after time, we see these small forward types get the midfield time and they don't actually produce the 90-plus fantasy scores we're sort of expecting when we talk midfield time. I think Darcy Lang's an okay flyer pick for next year, but it sort of remains to be seen how he's going to fit into that Carlton side, I guess, is the big query.
The big difference between these two, Kennedy and Lang, is Lang has blinding pace. Now, the one thing the midfield in Carlton that they lack is that pace. So I think it's Seaton. Those and Lang have got that pace. So Kennedy comes in, but he's a bit like Cripps. He's that inside hard, for want of a better term, a bit of a plotter. So I can see Cripps actually resting forward. That's when Kennedy gets his time in the midfield. Cripps goes in the midfield. Kennedy probably gets a rest on the bench. Where Lang, I can see getting bursts in the midfield, but actually might play a bit more wing. So is that outside running pace breaking the lines? So I actually see that in the potential, in the short term, I think Lang will score better than Kennedy. But longer term, Kennedy will actually be that ball magnet. But how many of those sort of similar types can you have in the midfield? And I think that's Sydney's problem at the moment, where your Parker, Kennedy and co all seem a little bit the same. They need that blinding pace, and that's where a couple of those young guns for Sydney Swans need to get in that midfield to inject the pace. And that's the same I see with Cripps and Kennedy. They're maybe a little bit too similar. But then again, I don't think Bryce Gibbs is a blind to pace, and that's probably where they see him replacing.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing. You got to, I mean, if you're in there, you got to, you're going to score. But I mean, the actual footy output might not be, the same. But I don't care about the actual footy. I care about the fantasy score. But Lang's going to be interesting. Like you mentioned, it's the pace that separates him from the pack. Was a first round talent, but just how he fits into the game plan, whether he can find the uncontested ball, the loose marks, like he got in the final series, I think that's where his fantasy scoring is going to come from.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And that's the way they've been playing last year. The Blues, that chip mark, kick mark, kick mark, kick mark. So be right on top of that. But I've got Bryce Gibbs. He's gone from Carlton to the Crows. He had a career year this year in Dream Team, averaging 112, and he scored 102 in Supercoach. Just having a look at how Gibbs is going to score this year in terms of clearances. Gibbs had 42 this year from 22 games, and he had the Crouch brothers with 55 and 49, whereas Sloan had 63. But the difference was when it actually came to goal-kicking, where the leader of the pack in the midfielders was Sloan with 20, and the Crouch brothers only kicked 8 and 9 respectively. Gibbs had 17, so Gibbs is going to be that second goal-kicking midfielder, which they actually lacked in the as we saw in the grand final. Once their forwards were taken to the game, they had no way to goal and no one to kick those goals, so Gibbs is that other avenue to goal. So I'm really liking it for Gibbs. He's probably not going to score you that 112. I don't see that happening with the way they share the ball, the Adelaide Crows. So going to drop back to that pack of the mid-105 to 108 sort of average. I'd love Gibbs to get back to his 2011 year where he was a 2-to-1 kick-to-handball ratio, 2-to-1 kick-to-handball ratio. It has gone up and it has gone down over the years since then, so that's perfect for building a score. More kicks than your handballs. And as I said, that 105, 107 average would be perfect. With Gibbs out of that midfield, Cripps is going to be that number one clearance beast yet again, where we saw him, was it 2 years ago, he was taking about a quarter of their centre clearances. So, yeah, Kennedy's going to come in there, but he's going to take time to develop. And Murphy, he's not that bull of a player as well, so look to get Cripps next year. And Gibbs, he's probably going to slide to where you normally get him in that end of the 8-10 round sort of area.
My concern for Adelaide is the Crouch boys when we talk about fantasy scoring. So you bring in another quality mid, which was the plan last year. I think the Crouch brothers actually showed they were up to it, so they didn't actually need Gibbs. Just Gibbs wanted to come home. You don't knock back a quality player. So my question with Matt Crouch, who I believe is a pig, but I think he's a pig with stats, maybe not a pig so much with scoring. So he tackles okay, but he's not upper level. He doesn't become that link-up player. He's the one that gets the footy in the first instance, if that makes sense. So his marks are never as high as you hope. And because he's the person that gets the footy in the first instance, he's actually handballing a lot more than he is kicking, even though he's efficient at all those skills. Now, when you get to that, you go, okay, well, Matt Crouch's other deficiency, he still gets it 36 to 40 times in the majority of games, but his scoring's a little bit low because of all those factors. But his time on ground is actually quite low compared to the rest of the midfield group and extremely low compared to all the other high scorers. So all of a sudden you throw another midfielder in the mix. It doesn't look like he's going to gain that extra time. The only thing I think can be a saving grace for both the Crouch brothers is possibly losing Brody Smith for long-term injury doing his ACL. Does Gibbs potentially play a little bit on the half-back flank where his ball use could be really important coming out of defence? Now, we've seen him play that role at Carlton before. Now, if they use that, it shores up their defence because they're lacking that. And then you still get the grunt from those midfielders being Sloan and the Crouch brothers. What's your thoughts, gents?
Well, if he's going back to the back line, we know how well that affected his fantasy scores. It pretty much went to the toilet from memory. But I don't know if it was Carlton's game plan, but his marks actually went up from almost doubled from 77 to 114. So he was using as that transition player as well, Gibbs, this year. So they could be using out on the wing there. Who knows? As with, what's his name, Rory Atkins.
What's your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I had the same worries as a someone who picked up Paul Seedsman pretty damn quickly. That he would be, because we've seen him play that role. I thought that was something that was on the cards, I guess you like. But I see Brad Crouch taking the hit. Oh, I think they're so similar. Personally, that's my take. Yep. I don't think it affects Matt Crouch's ceiling so much. And I also think Hugh Greenwood probably takes a little bit of a hit as well. He was a bit of a clearance machine when he got on the park. So I think...
Yeah, he might not get a game.
Or just perma forward.
Yeah, he might be, you know, pressuring forward. I don't know, but I see Brad Crouch and Greenwood as the big losers from the Gibbs move. But the back line move is a possibility as well. So
yeah, very true.
Big wait and see. Who's your next player there, Statesman?
It's one Gary Ablett. Do not draft him, I think was my line at the beginning of the year. My line for next year is go ahead and draft him, because when he changes and gets that forward status, everyone's going to be happy, let's face facts. So I expect Gaz to play 70-30 forward, swapping with Dangerfield. I think the expectations are Geelong need to score more goals. Tom Hawkins is not going to be the fix, but he still needs to play his role, and they've got no one to actually fill that forward small role. Gaz can play both tall and small, we know that. Menzel will get his one or two goals, but you need someone that can actually kick a bag full, and that's going to be Gaz. They've also lost the forwards, and even though you probably would play a bit more midfield in the teams they've gone to, talking about Lang and Motlop, it's actually not the midfield that they need to pick up on. So I can see Gaz playing that forward role, but actually swapping with Danger. So when Danger needs a break, he moves forward, Gaz gets a burst in the guts. That's the way I see it working. The big winner, and I mentioned this last week, is Melingola. So Melingola will now shore up his midfield. We talk about they still have the players that got the pace to break the line through that midfield. And that is obviously Danger and Selwood. So Menengola can play that traditional centre role, and he plays that very well, and he racks them up. I think the other possible winner with all the moves is Guthrie should get more wing time as well. So a bit of midfield rotation, but I think he'll get freed up on the wing because you've got the Motlop and Lang disappearing from that. So that's a win for both of them. Obviously, we'll talk about Gold Coast a little bit later on, but again, they've got a host of young talent now, less A-graders, but future talent. So we talk Tuke Miller, Lockie Weller, we've got heaps of those young guys. I don't know how they fit them all in. Jared Lyons is another one, Aaron Hall. Someone's going to miss out when we talk the Gold Coast. But at the moment, I think Geelong, Menengola are the big tick. I think Gaz will be the big tick because I reckon he'll play more games if he's playing forward, just a little bit less wear and tear. I think you'll find the big trip, so going over west, they won't bother with him. If they've got to play a game in Cairns, they won't bother with him. I think he'll play the 15 to 18 games and he'll kick 40 to 50 goals.
What are your thoughts on Duncan's fantasy output with Gaz coming in? Does that push him on the outside as well, do you think?
No, I think he's pretty firmed in that midfield rotation. So I see the big four going through there being Menegola, Duncan, Danger and Selwood. Of course, you add in Guthrie, you get a bit of relief from Gary Ablett himself. And I think that's a really good mix. So Menegola and Duncan are a little bit similar, but you've got the line breakers there already. It's not like Colton where you're looking for a line breaker. They've got two of them in there.
Do you see a world where Danger actually plays more forward? Like we saw this year, Gary was still one of the best clearance players in the competition. And Danger just absolutely annihilated teams when he was the forward. Is that a world? Is there a world where that happens?
Well, there's a world where they've got the perfect mix. So what happened when Danger moved forward? One game it worked really, really well, but it was more of a force move. Another game he did it, it started spark well, but he ended up going through the midfield. The problem when you have Danger up forward is you don't have him in the midfield. Here, and this is why they spent so much to make this happen, they've effectively got two of the best five players in the competition. So you never lose one from the midfield now. Does that make sense?
That's what I'm saying. So
it's a 70-30 split. So you've always got one in the midfield. You almost always got one in the forward line. So you've got that dangerous thing happening all the time. This, remarkably, they had to give away a fair bit and they lost a fair bit to make this happen. But if those players, so you're talking Selwood, Danger and Gary Ablett, if they stay on the park and everyone else is just playing their role, they're in to win every game. Things need to go their way, but all of a sudden, they're actually, talk about the premiership clock, it is midnight. Right here, right now. They've got two.
Heard it here first.
They've got two, possibly 3 years of this. At max, Gaz is playing at 37. They've got two, possibly 3 years of this. If one of them breaks down, then, and that's the problem here, you're probably relying on too few, and we all saw that when Selwood and Danger were at their best, you couldn't beat Geelong. But if you stopped one of them or stopped the influence that they had, then they were in a bit of trouble. All of a sudden, you've got three. Three's much harder to stop than two.
Sportsbet had the Cats at $9 to win the flag. So load up from the Statesman.
Load up.
So where do you realistically see yourself drafting Gary Ablett in a redraft?
Well, if you understood that his role's forward and you're in a league that you're talking go to forward, then all of a sudden he's top 10 again.
Even with the possibility of missing a chunk of games?
Yep, absolutely. Wow. But if you can get 105 to 110 scorer in your forward line, that's a big start to your year.
But he's not starting with that forward status, so you got to wait for it, and look what happened when we waited for some players to get that status that never came.
But if it's a 70-30 role like I'm expecting to happen, and I think Brian Cook's made that pretty clear. He said it's worth 40 goals. And it's worth 5,000 extra members.
Well, I'll be interested if
that's the plan, gentlemen. Things may change. I mean, if you get Duncan, Menegola, and Selwood all out, he plays more midfield time. But he'll play more games if he actually plays forward. And you only need him to touch the ball twice a quarter, and he's got probably 24 points a quarter.
Well, it'll be really interesting because we see him often hold off on the big names getting the position change, even if the time's there, even if the goals are there. I'll be terrified, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and even his value in a keeper's lifted again because of this. This is a 3-year plan for him to be a 40 to 50 goaler.
I might have to be wrong on one. Terrified.
Well, I at Gold Coast, I would say, get away. His body's no good. All of a sudden, these guys can nurse him.
Who is your next player there, Steve?
It's the infamous Jack Watts. He's gone to Port with everyone else. Very interesting nice move. Very interesting move. We know in fantasy, depending on the size of the league, he's been anything from unrosterable to an F3 over the journey, a bit more Supercoach relevant. Last year, he averaged 75 in both formats, but the really big question for me is where the heck is he going to play? He said himself he's going to be used as a link player, but at both ends of the ground. Now, reading between the lines, it sounds like that means there's going to be a tweak of the Port Adelaide game plan. So it's really hard for me to expect. We know he's played loose in defence, and I'd love him to play loose in defence. I think that's where his best fantasy scoring is going to be, if that's what's going to happen. But otherwise, I think his numbers, if he plays forward or wing or whatever the heck you want to call it, I think his numbers remain the same, but his goals take a hit, which makes him basically unusable in fantasy. Some have likened him to take a Tom Lynch role. That's the good personality Tom. But I don't think you can expect him to score like good personality Tom in any way, shape, or form. He's the best forward link player in the game. So I would really, it's a real preseason watch for me. But if Jack Watts is showing any sign of being a spare man in defence, a third tall, that is, I'm jumping on in a big way. Otherwise, I'm letting that one through to the keeper. Gentlemen.
If he is going to play that good personality the role, what does that do for Westhoff? Does that make him that loose man defence? What the hell is, what's going on there? Like, it just brings more questions to the table in terms of fantasy relevance for some of these Port Adelaide players.
Well, I honestly thought that Westhoff would be the guy to go into defence, but it's really hard to see a role, and they've got a young, tall forward who's basically a Justin Westhoff clone developing in Todd Marshall. They've got too many riches. I don't understand. Like, I personally think Jack Watts will probably go into defence, but that's just me sitting here in October saying that. It's a really interesting one. They've got a lot of talent, and they've got a lot of moving parts that they're going to need to figure out. It's going to be really interesting to see from what the coaches do with their team.
Can I say, I'll be honest, a lot of talk after the trade period that two of them have really taken a punt on winning a premiership. So Essendon with the three S's and also Port Adelaide. But I'd say Port Adelaide's three have all got some form of question mark on them. And then some form of question mark exactly what they're going to provide them. And are they sort of, you know, slightly upgrading another person from their list, so therefore someone who was in the starting 22 has just slipped out, but they're only, you know, 5% below them. I'm still really struggling to see where their midfield line breaker is. I think there's some good, solid, honest players. You know, Ollie Wines is a classic example. Ebert's a good link player, but his disposal's not fantastic. So then I look at the two at the moment and I'm going, well, Essendon have played a longer game, Port Adelaide a shorter game. It's a short window for there. But if I was to punt on who's made the call to make them a premiership team, it's Geelong ahead by a long, long way. Because I look at the midfield of Geelong and then look at the midfield of Port Adelaide and think their forward lines now are probably reasonably similar. Hawkins is reliable as Charlie Dixon is. And then you're looking at their smalls. Well, I'd rather Gaz be kicking me 40, 50 goals than relying on Jake Need or
Stringer.
Or Stringer, yeah, for Essendon's case. So it's quite interesting that the two sort of come out and they go and they've really put themselves in a premiership window. But I think another club's actually done that themselves. And if I was to coach an AFL team for 1 year, out of those three, I think I'd go Geelong.
Well, you've taken the short road to success as usual. Port Adelaide got some quality players like Robbie Gray and Chad Wingard.
Yep.
I mean, they're quality players, if we'll be honest. But But we're talking midfield? Fantasy, not premierships. We're talking premiership. We're talking fantasy, not premierships.
Yeah, and but then again, they keep on talking about Rockcliffe being a 60-40 forward. I go, well, what do you need a small forward for when you've got Wingard and Robbie Gray?
Well, maybe Robbie Gray is actually healthy and they can chuck him back in the midfield.
I think it was only about 4 months ago where the coach admitted he's got groin problems and will for the remainder of his career.
Maybe the chemo's going to clear that up. Who knows?
Well, that's another challenge for him, of course.
Mm.
I'm unsure where their three recruits, Watts, Motlop and Rockcliffe, and they could all play season career best, have their best career seasons next year in fantasy scoring. They all could. But I'm just sort of one that's not convinced. I'm certainly a watch for all three.
I'm leaving. I just want to, if Jack Watts is playing off half back, that's where I want him. Rockcliffe, I'm probably not drafting because I don't think he's got the ceiling. I think the interesting side is also at Melbourne. Like, it's camp time, baby. No, I'm just kidding.
Second tall, who knows?
That's going to be interesting. I mean, they need to start getting some games into Wiedemann. Yep. He's not going to be a fantasy star or anything like that. So there's probably not much to talk about on that end. But Jack Watts in defence, gimme.
Fair enough.
The next guy I've got is Jake Stringer, and I don't want gimme. He's never played a full season. He's always had those soft tissue hammy injuries. I might get a little bit salty here, but his best averaging season, which was his All-Australian year in 2015... was only 75 in Dream Team and 78 Supercoach. Not really playable, draftable at all. Great for plug and plays when he's matchup dependent. We've seen him tear teams apart when he kicks a bag of goals. And that's what he relies on, bags of goals, because he's only averaging 13 on disposals, a few marks and a few tackles a game. So his score is really built on goal kicking. Now, the Bombers have come out and said, yeah, he's going to be playing more midfield time. But is it going to be as that inside mid that they really need? I really don't see it. I mean, yeah, he's 190 centimetres, 90 kilo, but I just see him as a spurt, a five to eight minute spurt player there, which is not really conducive to building that score for a player. But for me, it's a hard pass right now on Jakey Stringer.
Yeah, gentlemen, I need to ask the question. He's constantly been mentioned, this is for years, that he's going to be a player that gets midfield rotations, bigger body through the midfield. He's never proven that his body can last a bit of time up forward, let alone do the extra running with the midfield. Where does that actually come from?
Well, it actually probably came from after when the Doggies won the premiership. He actually came back early with Lockie Hunter, and they actually were doing a fitness camp, so Stringer could play more midfield time in 2017, but he just got those soft tissue injuries that couldn't keep him on the park. So, I don't know, maybe Essendon's medical staff can help him out, but who knows?
Jeez, I love how you resisted the urge there, John. That's a...
Wow.
Well, mate, played with a straight bat. Just a straight bat.
Big step forward. I think he's had spurts in there and done some okay things. He's that flashy sort of player, but the day I have Jake Stringer on my team, you know, I'm playing like 35 players on the field, and I'm not a fan at all.
You need a 50th forward.
I need a 50th forward. He's really locking down my F47.
Remarkably, at the beginning of this year, someone within the Fantasy Keeper League, the Listener League, was actually trying to sell me Stringer for one of my guns, and I just went, why would I even think or bother? But anyway, that's my thoughts on Stringer.
He's the sizzle, he ain't the steak.
He
is the package.
Actually, you made the connection to BT's two favourite nicknames, the weapon and also the package.
And Orazio. I mean, geez, he's got the lot.
Yes.
Yes, I did see a thing on Facebook. There is a Brian Taylor page. He's petitioned the AFL to commentate every Essendon game on free-to-air this year.
I love the PT page.
Love it, love it. He's moved on to cricket now, which is quite good as well. Have you seen some of them on YouTube?
Cricket is the most baffling sport in the world, Jono. Baffling in the sense that why would anyone watch it?
Much like commented Anchorman. By BT, though. Ooh, commented. It's pretty good. The next guy I got is Harley Balick, who's moved from Fremantle to Melbourne. He's only played the 4 games, but started off quite poorly. Only had the 35 in his first game, but started to build some scores nicely. He had only in the 4 games, he averaged 13 disposals, 3 marks, and 3 tackles. He's going to play as that forward midfielder with a look to use him as an inside 50 launcher when he does play that midfield time, similar to a Gus Brayshaw. I think he's a Gus Brayshaw replacement once he gets one of those concussions. I see them as the same type player. So if Gus does get on the park, I don't see Balick really playing too much, but I just see him as that backup for Gus Brayshaw for me. Pretty much a keeper prospect to look out for me at this stage.
Yeah, I'm just purely a watch, to be honest, gentlemen. Not that excited. I know there was a lot of talk to him about him being a first-round draft pick in his draft year, and he sort of slipped through to later. Fair bit gone on since then, but still not convinced. I'll just hold off and hold fire. If I see something good and he's on the waiver wire, I'll pick him up, but nothing until then.
Yep, fair enough. And if you are liking the show, we are on iTunes, Stitcher and SoundCloud. And if you've got a few minutes, hit that review button. It only takes you a couple of minutes. It really helps our brand to get out there. Hit the 5-star ratings if you are on the iTunes. We really appreciate it. So if you just take a couple of minutes out of your time. And also hit that subscribe button. That way the Draft Doctors comes to you each and every week without you having to look for us and go straight to your device. But Statesman, who have you got for your next players?
Yeah, a couple that are giving another chance from South Australian clubs in Young Wigg and Aaron Young. Firstly, I must say, forget Young. He does not have a tank, so he'll only play deep forward. He'll score him a few goals, but if you're playing deep forward in a bottom eight team, and I can't see him being anything but a bottom eight team, just put a pass, put a line through. Might be one if they've got a Friday game, which is probably unlikely, gentlemen. But if they do, just put him on your bench from the waiver wire and see if he scores a big one. He'll pop out an 80 or 90 occasionally in the right game, but nothing worthwhile on the longer term, whether that be keeper or just one season leagues. Wigg, on the other hand, I rate him, and I think I called him Mini Sloan during the pre-season. He will get opportunities. Again, it comes into the how many young guns have they got, which is quite a few. How do you fit them all in and what type of roles do they get? But if he gets a sniff of any midfield time, this kid goes all right, gentlemen. So he's got the type of game that is going to build a score. He tackles, he can be the link. He can actually get his hands on the ball early. He does use the football reasonably well. There's a question sometimes on decision making, but once you get in the pill well enough, you're going to make decent decisions every now and again that'll keep him in the squad.
Is he more your inside midfielder or outside, or is he combination type?
He's the combination. That's why I call him the Mini Sloan, and that's the way I see Rory Sloan, where he can go and get his own ball, but he can become that link player as well. He's got a reasonably good tank. He's got reasonably good pace. I was very impressed with the way he played in the pre-season. But I understand why he didn't get the opportunities at Adelaide. We're talking a team that made the grand final and went in as favourites. And they had a good run with their midfielders. Only Brad Crouch that really had any long-term out this year. This man is very relevant salary cap this year, and a worthwhile late pickup in a keeper. And just to watch in the pre-season for the season-only drafts, just have a look and see what type of role he's going to play. I hope he's not one that ends up having to play like a Lang, where he plays a bit forward or a bit in defence, because he is a pure midfielder, and we hope they've actually picked him up to be part of that rotation and go with the young kids. They've all got 2, 3, 4 years into them now, so that young group should be a pretty decent midfield. And I don't think we'll see Barlow for the early part of the season. So I think they should go with all the young kids.
Riscatelli time.
He's not a young kid.
Can I
say, gentlemen, I forgot to mention this last week when he was brought up, but Luke Hodge going to Brisbane. So I've looked at my keeper team. I've gone, okay, there's a few people I can drop off, and maybe there's a few during that early trade period that I can just pick up and just have a bit of a watch at the pre-season before I make the decision on the 12 I'm going to keep. So Luke Hodge announces his retirement. I've won the premiership. We go out, have Mad Monday. I pat Hodgie on the back. Great job, mate. Well done. Great grand final. You, Kelly and Boyd, fantastic. The old boys get us through one more time. So I drop him. And then 2 days later, he announces his return. I thought, I'd better go back on and just put him back on the list. Someone had already picked him up.
Was it Steve? He loves his old boys.
No. It wasn't Steve, but I thought, very smart. And whichever team did that, very, very smart. Well done, well picked up.
Who are we talking about then? Wig and Young. Yeah, no interest in Young and Wig. He is certainly a prospect. But it's going to be interesting with Stewie Jew as the new coach in which way he's going to go. Is he going the Hawthorn way or is he going to go the Sydney way?
Well, I don't know about game style. He's probably going to be a bit of a mixture of both. But what I hope he does and what I expect he does is he's got a bit of a license here, I would suggest. But you've got to get the balance right of development and some form of success, because there's a big carrot in one Tom Lynch or whether you retain him, and they want to see things going the right way. So you want sort of that Brendan Bolton type result where everyone can see they're heading in the right direction, rather than this Gold Coast thing of getting a couple of wins early and then having some big losses. So I'm hoping that he goes majority back in this group of 21 to 25 year old midfielders. So we're talking the Wig, the Lions, the Hall, the Lockie Weller now they've got. So you just go with the whole group. Took Miller again. Be interesting to see where he ends up playing Took Miller. I can probably see him with that many young midfield recruits that Took Miller ends up being keeping forward status rather than, you know, be that midfield. But I hope he goes with that whole group and just backs them in, sells them a style of footy that they can understand and execute and be passionate about. I hope that's the case. Only time will tell.
I just worry about Wig. You mentioned they've got this whole brigade. Like, how does he get past guys like Swallow, Lions, Hall? Like, for me, I can see them sort of, each player sort of getting 3 games in a row and then missing 2. And for me, I just can't have a bar of that for a redraft. I don't see the upside.
Yeah, you need to look at it. But I would hope Swallow becomes that halfback flanker, because there's still a lot of talk about how his knee actually is.
Oh, I'm all about Hanley on that role.
Yeah, I just worry about Hanley's body. It broke down way too many times this year. It may be a one-off, but I just see there's something wrong with that body at the moment. I hope it gets fixed, but I'm really worried that might be done for him. And they've got to play replace Saad as well, and maybe Hanley does the Saad role and Swallow does the beat the opponent one-on-one and then run off.
What happened to Colin Chesney? Jesus. He just... The concussion's just...
Probiotic
diet. Yeah, the yogurt stitched him up.
Cult diet.
Yeah, and you keep looking through the list, and it's funny. They actually generally, on paper, have a very, very talented list. Very, very talented list. So
get what day back, so...
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what they come out looking like, and hopefully there's Rocket had to do a fantastic job in changing the culture, and hopefully that gets just taken to another level with the good bunch and right bunch of kids. And we say kids, they're actually, the difference here is they're actually young men. So the majority of their group are, I think they're averaging now the 23 to 24 age. So I actually think they're in the right age group. They're ready to go. And it's probably, arguably, just that little bit of leadership in the midfield that they're missing.
Yep.
So who's their Danger? Who's their Selwood? Who's their Pendlebury? That's sort of what they're missing, I think. But I'm sure there'll be someone in there.
Moving on, Steve, who have you got there, mate?
I'm going to be talking about a really happy situation. We've talked about a few bitters and a few sad fantasy situations, but Shane Mumford, get the hell out of here. And
sausage-eating king of Bunyip is gone.
It's time for one thing I love more than anything in fantasy, a person who's a forward to get number one ruck status. And we're talking about Rory Lobb. There is nothing more fantasy gold than a useless forward, an unrosterable forward getting thrown into the number one ruck role where he can score points at will, a la your Cam Pedersen, a la your Stephen Martins of years before. This is unbelievable. When he was solo ruck in the finals, just scored you the 90 Dream Team, 83 Dream Team, 108 and 129 Supercoach, if you don't mind. Had one of the best hit out, when he was playing solo ruck, had the best hit out to advantage rate in the entire league. Don't mind that, especially for your Supercoach leagues. All he's got is Dawson Simpson backing him up. He's not taking anyone's spot. If you're in a position change league, you grab yourself Rory Lobb, you grab yourself a late round ruck like we always recommend, you have yourself a merry old time. And when Rory Lobb gets that ruck status in round six, it's happy days. You've got options galore. I guess the only question is, will he be the only ruckman in that team over the season? We've never seen him play the whole season as the solo ruck. Will he wear down? Will they give him a break here and there? I can see that, and it kind of makes sense. You might have to wear a few games of lower scoring, but Rory Lobb hitting it to that midfield, it's best clearance midfield in the league. It's just a points bonanza. I can't see any reason not to draft him as an F2.
It kills two birds with one stone. They were top heavy when they have the three big forwards, which was Patton, Cameron and Lobb. They were too top heavy. They performed better when a few of them were out injured or suspended. All of a sudden, Lobbs now becomes the ruckman and Patton becomes his reliever. So he's the forward ruck, which is absolutely fantastic because their forward line all of a sudden is two and at times one when Lobbs have an arrest. Absolutely perfect. So they can go small, get the young guns all around the ground, which is a bit Richmond-esque. Absolutely perfect. They play better footy in doing so. The reality is one retirement has been huge benefit for the structure of that football team.
And also the good thing with Rory Lobb is he's great at contested marks, so if they do want to change it up and go a small forward line, they can throw Rory Lobb in defence to rest up and take those contested marks, which equals more points.
So yeah, it's a huge win. Huge win all around.
Win, win, win.
Mm. Love it. Love it. Big on Rory Lobb next year in drafts. Very big.
Someone who I'm not big on next year is Charlie Cameron, who has moved to the Brisbane Lions. Yeah. That face you're making, Steve, that's exactly the face I made when you dropped this run sheet. Again, he's your Charlie Cameron type, your 13 disposals, couple of marks, four tackles and a goal a game. He's always been compared to Eddie Betts since he's been to the club. And I was just having a look at Eddie Betts' scores. The best he got to when he was playing in a good team back in Carlton was 84. And yes, he's gone to Adelaide and scored 88s in Supercoach. But he's going to a poorer team where Eddie Betts only hit that 84 once. The rest was bang on 80s and the rest was lower. So I don't see where this score is going to come from. I see it more as your Jake Stringer type. He's going to get your 60s and 70s. It's I'm not about it. I know he's got that X factor. He relies on his goals to get you those scores, but he's not for me at all. Grab him in a keeper, but not for me at whatsoever.
I generally think Brisbane are heading in the right direction, gentlemen. Certainly not enough to make Charlie Cameron worthwhile to be drafted, but actually think as a football club, they've got some really, really good kids. And I think their model's heading in the right direction. So I don't think his scoring is going to be as bad as thinking that he's all of a sudden a small forward in a wooden spoon team. I think they're heading in the right direction and better than some.
I agree they're heading in the right direction, but I don't see the scores coming in next year. I think it might be the year after. So if he's on the list there for keepers, stash him away for a year and you... be pleasantly surprised.
I'll be surprised if Cameron ever becomes fantasy relevant, to be honest.
You don't see him as an 83, 84 averaging forward?
No.
No.
I think he's, I do. His best chances were last year.
Yep.
Moving on then.
So Lockie Weller, I think I've spoken about Lockie a fair bit, but I just look at how much they've invested with him, that if you're going to invest so much as a club, then you're expecting him to become a leader of your midfield group. That's how much they've invested in him. So I expect that's there. I'm probably thinking at the moment that players that they've currently got will fill those defensive roles, and I sort of suggested Swallow sort of moving back there. He's a great runner. He's a great ball user. They probably want him to break the line. So whether it's wing or midfield, I think that's where Lockie Weller goes. I think the scoring will be slightly up. I don't think he's going to be a world beater early days, but something in a keeper, he should be fine because he'll keep his defensive status to start, most certainly.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting one. They paid a pretty steep price, didn't they, to get him in. I kind of feel sorry for Gold Coast, it kind of seemed like they're a little bit over the barrel. Not many people want to go there, and that's the sort of pick they had. So I think he's worth a punt, that's for sure. Certainly think he's worth a pick.
Yep, agreed.
Yep, absolutely. And who are your last couple of players there, Steve?
I'm going to talk about a couple of Port Adelaide departures. Strange to think that anyone actually left that club. It seemed like everyone headed there this year, but... Matt Lobey, interesting. Matt Lobey, Statesman used the term salary dump, and it seems like what Matt Lobey was, but does provide Carlton a little bit of depth. You know, if Cruz does happen to get injured, and I'm not putting the moz on him, but let's be honest, he's been pretty unreliable. Lobey might be someone you could pick up, certainly not drafting him. And Brennan Archie, and he's moved over to West Coast, back to his home state, WA. Very interesting. He's been around for... It's funny, if you look at him up, look him up on the fan footy or whatever, he's got three seasons, but he's actually been around for six. So he's only managed the 27 games in his sixth season since being drafted in 2011. Only had the five games last year. He's only 23 years old, so I guess that you could say there's some upside there. Averaged the 58 Dream Team, 58 Supercoach. And I don't think anyone would doubt that he hasn't shown some serious flashes of ability. When he changed clubs, West Coast are sort of talking midfield roles and opportunity. That is where his best role is. He certainly produced good numbers in the sandful. So he could be a real sleeper in your drafts with forward status. But for mine, it's hard to picture him getting a midfield gig, given he's never been a regular in his career. And it's just there's guys already in there that have been in the system that they've developed. So I find it more likely if he's going to get games, it's on a half-forward flank, because he has played forward in the past. So I really struggle to see the upside for Brennan Archie from a fantasy perspective, unless there's, say, injuries to guys like Redden. But that's kind of where I am on those two.
Yeah, I'm a little bit unsure what's happening at West Coast in their midfield. And I think I said last week that Archie could be one of the big winners out of this, which I think he certainly could be. But I want to see how it works and operates. So I'm thinking more that they need that extra run of breaking the lines. And I think he can do that more than what a Sheed, a Redden, and a Shuey are going to do, because I reckon Shuey gets all the attention, him and Gaff. And so they're looking for that extra runner. So, I need to wait to see what it looks like, to be honest. I won't be picking either of those in any draft, and if I'm wrong, I cop it.
Oh, look, the only good thing about Matthew Loby is the interesting Matt Loby Facebook page is up and going again, and that's about it.
Wasn't that fantastic? It's just come out of nowhere.
12 months.
Statesman's looking confused. It's like me watching cricket, just, what's going on?
12 months of composure, he's back, baby.
Please move to America.
Just had I wish I could. Just had his cup of tea, he's had his lie down, he's good to go.
Had a chat with Kane Mitchell, it's all good. But the last bloke on our list for tonight is Brandon Matera. He has gone to the Fremantle Footy Club. In two minds of where they might play him. Statesman, you might be able to help me out on this one. I'm not too sure. Does he have any pace on him? Because I haven't really seen too much of Brandon Matera play.
Yes, but they're short bursts, so therefore he's a forward line player, not a midfield.
No, I was actually thinking more towards the back line, running off that half back with sort of a Brad Hill type, so Connor Blakely goes into that midfield. And they can just run the lines that way. But if it's only just short bursts, then he is going to play that forward mid type.
There's two positions for him. It's up forward or left right out.
Okay, there you go. So he's going to be the Hayden Ballantyne stay-at-home small crumbing forward, do you think?
He's a long-term future, and I think that sort of cements of what they're going to do with Walters. They're going to move him to the midfield.
Yeah, no, it was just an interesting one. But, if he's going to be forward, then stay-at-home forward, then I've got no interest in him, because we saw what Walters was putting up when he was stay-at-home forward. Not great, but as soon as he got that midfield time, it's boom time.
Was rated very highly. And if you look at champion data with all the previews, with the prospectus, that they expected him to have a breakout somewhere along the way. I wouldn't be surprised if he has a really good season somewhere in his career. I don't know if he's a really long-term fantasy option. So at the moment, I'm just avoid, watch, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, if one of my favourite podcasts is the Drill Podcast, going around, happy to pump it up, but the Champion Data Boys, they actually had him rated elite this year. On his performances. And I just think it goes to show, like, small forwards, just it's so hard to be fantasy relevant. And
yep.
So in terms of footballing wise, his stats aren't bad for a small forward. I mean, 17 possessions, 4.5 marks a game, and 2.5 goals a game averaging. So, and that's from, I think it was 16 games. So that's really good. But
absolutely.
It doesn't translate to fantasy scores. But
and that information expresses why you don't want him out of the forward line.
Yeah, exactly right. But he, just looking at his scores, they're more AFL fantasy relevant than the super coach. So if you need a plug and play or a matchup, look for Brandon Matera next year, depending on how old was the boss.
Oh, yeah, for all those lockdown Fremantle dominating wins they're going to have. You like Fremantle. Don't even start. Don't even start. You like Fremantle, don't you?
Me?
Yeah.
Next year I do.
Yeah, that.
New Perth Stadium, it's just... Everything's coming up
for you.
Well, I did get picked too, I suppose.
One thing we didn't talk on is Josh Shackey, and we know he's not going to be fantasy relevant next year, but just as to why the Doggies got him, and I had a bit of a theory. I was thinking Josh Shackey's going to play the lone tall forward in that 50 with Hayden Crozier. Ruffhead and Trengove are going to pinch hit ruck and defence, while Tom Boyd is going to play the handsome Tom link-up role.
You've lost it, pal. You've lost it.
Or have I overthought it?
You know why they got Josh Shackey? Because they were going to look like idiots when they lost Stringer for just crap. So they had to do something right.
25 and 30, and we got 16 back there. So.
Can I say I'm confused? Collingwood entered the Devon Smith discussion. I think the last thing they need was another midfield type. Here was an opportunity where they can get what they are lacking. Now, sure, he's not probably going to pay off in the next 6 to 12 months, but Josh Shackey, one of the highest rated junior forwards, would have been absolutely perfect. So now they're talking about Darcy Moore lining up in defence in the preseason to see if he can play that role. I'm still asking the question, who's kicking the goals for Collingwood?
Tom Lynch in 2018.
Who?
Tom Lynch in 2018, well, buddy.
Handsome Tom.
Well,
or 20, if, what is it, 2019?
If 2019. Yeah. If they've got that, then it's the right strategy. But a lot can happen between now and then.
Quite amazing.
If they've got him signed up, if they've got it organised, if the deal's going to happen, then not a problem. Makes sense. But if it's still, there's a fair chance it might happen. I still would rather two rather than one, because you build him into the good player he's going to be and you've got an asset to flog off.
What you haven't taken into account is that Sam Wiedemann could really develop next year. Cam could play out his contract. Collingwood swoop in on Cam.
Cam Peterson. Yeah, problem yeah, silly me.
I agree with you that Shackey should have been a Collingwood target. I don't understand it myself. Even if you happen to land Shackey and Handsome Tom, which I guess you probably wouldn't have the money to, but yeah, certainly Darcy Moore needs some help.
But see, Shackey would have actually come quite cheap when we're talking salary cap. And you could actually sign him on a decent, because he needed that security in future. He wanted to come home. It's not as if he's gone and had a Jeremy Cameron Coleman medal under his belt. He hasn't got that. So his value is actually dropped. So you actually get him quite cheap. So if you actually commit to him, sign him up for a fair contract, he's your asset, and he's your asset to sell later on when he does become a good player. Because I guarantee you one thing, I'd be very, very surprised if Josh Shackey, and a few have, like, leaves the game not fulfilling close to his potential.
Well, sometimes you just got to back the club in. Like, they would have.
Yep.
I mean, they would have absolutely done their due diligence.
They know a lot. They know a lot more than me when it comes to what their plans are in 12 months' time, or who's going to kick their goals. And it might be the young kid that got the chance at the last home and away game that they see as the goal kicking saviour for them.
Mason Cox.
No.
That's what's going to be in 2018 for Collingwood fans.
God.
But did you see Bucks' report on the players today?
No.
He released his report on ABC on graders. Treloar was B grader and so was Taylor Adams, that B to C grade. So.
Oh, yes. No, I did see that. And yeah, Taylor Adams was a C grader.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, I thought. He's pretty harsh.
Maybe he has to be.
Well, we all know what Taylor Adams' disposal efficiency is like, so that's fair enough. So,
oh, that's all right. He also said North are 10 years away from any success, so.
Was that Bucks, was it? Or Bucanara?
Bucanara. Isn't that who you're talking about?
Was that Bucanara, was it? I only just quickly read. I thought it was Bucks' report on his players, because he gave Daniel Wells an A grading as well.
No, no, no.
That couldn't have been Nathan Buckley. Surely he wouldn't have gone.
Yeah, I don't think that wouldn't have been public.
Yeah, that would have been.
Okay, then it might have been Buccaneer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do your research, Johnny. Jesus.
Come I just on. Said Bucks. It's a tweet. It's 140 characters. I mean, on. Jesus.
No wonder you're like Anchor, man. You don't know what's going on.
Hey,
77 of the people. When you lose
the premiership, Jesus. Mate, when you lose the grand final, you've got to accept it, Steve. And when you lose a vote to 3-1, you've just got to accept it, mate.
No, Trump won a vote as well, so I'm calling you Trumpers. If you like Trump, if you like Anchorman, you're basically Trump.
You're basically Trump.
You know the worst thing about it all was someone, one of the OTLS boys said it was just meh.
Meh.
That was meh.
That was Zeno, wasn't it? Well, Zeno, meh.
Who has a middling opinion on this movie? I've never met anyone who had a middling opinion on it.
Steve, we're going to talk about something that's more important than Anchorman. It's the 30th anniversary of Predator.
I was watching Predators today.
And they're having a cinematic release in the UK, but we've got to get it going here in Australia because I want to go see it at the cinema.
Oh, yeah. That's good use of money.
Predator is the best movie in history. It's fact.
You won't get a butler wasting your coin on that, mate.
I bet you we get a poll up. Predator and Anchorman. Predator wins 100%.
Nah, there'd be some jerks who don't like action movies. Or who haven't seen it all the way through, Costa. You dick.
All right, we better wrap this up. Thank you very much.
I'm insulting people who don't listen to the show. There you go.
Because it's the off season, so he won't hear this, so it's fine. It's fine. But if you want to follow us on social media, you can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors or at Statesman33. Check out the Facebook page, The Draft Doctors there, or on the Instagram, The Draft Doctors as well. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.